Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
All right, here we go on a Monday in Kansas City. I guess we'll call it a victory Monday still. Does that count? It's been too many days. Maybe we can't call it that. But either way, hope everybody had a terrific Thanksgiving weekend. It's going to be back after a couple shows off last week. For the next couple days, just Drew and I. Cody will be back later on in the week. He's taking a couple more days off as well. But Drew Nixon producing the show, Alex Gold here, Andy Reid coming up at noon today. The only place you can hear from Andy Reid is right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. As always, you guys can interact with us, 913-586-7965. That is the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. Video stream will be up and running here shortly as well. You can watch the show on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, wherever you social, as we like to say on the show. As I said, I hope you guys had a great weekend. We're going to talk a ton about the Raiders game a little bit more, bigger picture, right? The game was a couple days ago at this point. I want to spend too much time specifically with the game as much as it is kind of broader of what that game meant, and then looking around the NFL a little bit. But Drew, you have a good Thanksgiving, man. I haven't seen you in a week or so. We'll get to the rest of the NFL and some of that.
Yeah,
but you stayed in town, right?
I did. The wife and I made food on Thursday. We were able to relax a little bit. And
like, did you do the turkey and everything?
So we actually did ham.
Okay.
We did not do turkey.
Okay.
But yeah, we went to the store, got a half ham, and did the whole thing. Yeah.
Nice.
So, very, very good. It was nice to be able to relax. I'm sure it was nice for you as well.
Yeah, it was nice to have a couple days off. I had some friends that were in town as well, just back for the holidays, so had a chance. Normally, of course, we're doing the show during the lunch hour, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, went to a couple places for lunch that hadn't been in a while and showed some people around, so that was kind of nice. And then Thanksgiving-wise, pretty traditional, man. Pretty traditional stuff. Go over to the family's house, hang out with the nephews and everybody, and like a lot of people, right, just sit around and watch football, even if it was Dallas and the Giants at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and everything like that. But we'll get to the Bears game, don't worry, and one of the worst final 30-second sequences I've ever seen in the NFL. And sometimes I try to pause and step back and be like, all right, was it actually that bad, or are we just in the moment, recency bias? No, it was that bad for Chicago. So we'll get to that, but welcome your guys' interaction, and hope you guys had a great holiday weekend and trying to figure out where you guys are at with this football team, because I do want to start with the Chiefs game against the Raiders, and then we can talk bigger picture. Because initially, right, it's pretty simple what happened on Black Friday. One, it was weird. It was a 2 o'clock game. As I was sitting there in the press box, I felt like it was Sunday the entire time, sitting next to other people. We were all saying, like, it didn't feel right. It was nice to have the weekend free, though, wasn't it? After you got done with Friday, it was very nice to have a stress-free Sunday watching football. But what happened on Friday, I wasn't here the week before when you guys were talking about the Carolina Panther game, Drew, but my guess is it was probably very similar. Like, same kind of reaction. In this case, the Raiders raided, fumbling a snap late, and the Chiefs chief. They each have different definitions, right? We know when I say the Raiders raider, we all know it means they had a coaching blunder, they made a big mistake, or something like that. When the Chiefs chief, it's, well, they played down to their opponent. It was ugly. It was frustrating. They let Aiden O'Connell throw for, 300-plus yards, and Sincere, whatever the heck his name was, run for 65 yards. Guys that have no business.
Sincere McCormick?
Yeah, that guy, sure. Off the practice squad for the Raiders. Who is exactly right? That's what Chiefs mean when they end up still getting a win. In this case, of course, to get to 11-1. And let's not ultimately forget this is still an 11-1 football team that has clinched a playoff spot for a 10th straight year. I know we're all spoiled, and now we just expect that. We just expect division titles and everything. I get it. They're judged on a different scale, but I think it's important to remember that in the grand scheme of things. But the Raiders lose on a fumbled snap while also having two wide receivers that were not set. There was some weird, like, national I don't want to say controversy, but certainly conversation of what really happened. You know, what was the call right or wrong, or whatever. Nobody was set. Like Jacoby Myers and another player on the Raiders were not even set. It was clearly an illegal formation at the time. Live, like a lot of you, I thought it was going to be a false start penalty and they were going to redo the play. When you step back, as the officials did, they got the call right, and there was multiple players not set, and then the center got tapped by his right guard, I think it was, and he thought it was time to snap the football. People, it actually wasn't even on Aiden O'Connell. It was on, I believe, the guard and then ultimately the center for having the snap that resulted in the fumble, and the Chiefs still had to make a play on said fumble. Fortunate to win. Look, if we go through the long pecking order of close games, now it's 14 straight one-score games the Chiefs have won. Yeah, if you're going to win 14 straight one-score games, are there going to be breaks that go your way? Absolutely. Like, I'll still say the Denver Broncos game was not luck. That was a design special teams block that they saw in film and executed. This game definitely falls a little closer to the category, admittedly, Drew,
yes,
of luck. But you know what? When you're a dynasty, when you're trying to three-peat, I got no problem. Like, nobody should be ashamed. Like, it shouldn't upset. Like, nobody should be ashamed to be like, you know what? Maybe had a little luck go our way throughout that run. Nobody cares. Fast forward 20 years from now, if the Chiefs three-peat, nobody's going to go back and say, yeah, but you know what? That Denver game or that Raider game, you guys got lucky. Who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? So, like, in terms of the game, matter. Like, I thought, honestly, what was most stunning about that game, not how close it was, because as we've all come to find out, this is how this team has won games in 2024. What was stunning for me is I expected Antonio Pierce to have coaching blunders, whether it was, you know, a 58-yard field goal try, and they called a timeout before they kicked the field goal, so they wasted a timeout, and their kicker had missed multiple kicks, as if the special teams coach did not communicate during warmups how their kicker was performing in the conditions. They just, like, seemingly just weren't aware that Carlson wasn't capable of making that kick on that day because of the conditions inside Arrowhead. Like, I expected Antonio Pierce to have blunders. What was kind of stunning was some of the situational blunders, even more so on the coaching end for Kansas City. There's a difference of, hey, the player's not executing on a play, and to me, coaching being involved on the particular play. I'm, of course, pointing out the 3rd-and-2, where they're a first down away maybe from milking the clock out and winning that game, the Chiefs were. And instead, on 3rd-and-2, they try a play-action deep shot to Worthy, which we all know that's been a huge story for weeks, that they just have not been able to connect on deep passes down the field to Worthy. And that was like the play that they initially called. Like, we can say it's execution, sure, but at some point you have to know that's not a play you've been executing well as a football team. So I just thought it wasn't a well-coached game. It was an ugly football game. You get the win, you move on. But there's bigger conversations to be had, right, about this game. And that is what I'm assuming you and Cody talked about last Monday after the Panthers game, which is the same question is there, right? We changed the team name. Instead of Carolina, it's the Raiders. Instead of Bryce Young, who's playing better football, by the way, it was Aiden O'Connell. But it was the same type of game. Therefore, the question of how good are the Chiefs still has the same answer to me as whatever your answer was last Monday. Like, I don't know what the text line was like on Monday last week, if everybody was, it was doom and gloom or people were optimistic. I don't know. I can kind of guess which one it was, given how the text line sometimes can be.
Yes.
Love you, text line. Therefore, it's as simple as you ask, how good are the Chiefs, and you grade it on a scale of, can they win a Super Bowl? That's all we're talking about here in Kansas City. We're not in Washington, D.C. with the Commanders where it's like, well, how good are they? Well, they're good enough to make the playoffs. They're good enough to win a playoff game. That's the scale they're judged on. They're exceeding expectations. In Kansas City, we all know this football team is trying to three-peat, and that's how we judge them, and I get it, and that is how we should judge them. So that's really the question. It comes down to your belief in them figuring it out in the playoffs. That's how I would sum it up. We all know there are flaws with this football team. And coming up at 11 o'clock today, I'm going to get to two things that I think absolutely have to change before Sunday's game, let alone by the playoffs, before Sunday's game against the Chargers. I feel like they're both fairly obvious things that have to be corrected. We'll see if you guys agree a little bit later on. But it comes down to your belief in them figuring it out in the playoffs. And I'll side with the history of this regime. And that's why, admittedly, I kind of laughed when I heard Rex Ryan yesterday on ESPN talking about watching this Chiefs team and what he thinks is going to happen come playoff time.
The only thing you're missing, this ain't the same team as last year. There's no Ladarius Snead out there. Their defense is average as hell, especially against a vertical passing game. You guys seem to think it's going to be the same. It's not.
So
that left tackle
can
block me, and I'm telling you right now, Pacheco, he better be healthy, or I'm telling you.
So you're telling me you're sitting up here counting the Kansas City, the back-to-back Super Bowl defending champion. You're counting them out, right?
I'm saying this, Randy. I recognize the fact that they're going to get the bye. All right? Now all they have to do is win one more game there in the championship game. I don't think the way they're playing, I don't have any faith in it. Why? I've been around this game all my life. I've seen teams like this before. And you know what happens to them? They get beat in the first round.
So that was Rex Ryan on ESPN yesterday. I'll point out again that Patrick Mahomes, in his entire career, has not lost in a first-round playoff game. In fact, his only loss, and Drew will love this, is in an overtime game. That's the earliest exit. Earliest exit in an overtime game of an AFC title game.
What a time that was, wasn't it?
That's the earliest exit he has had. So this notion of like, hey, there you can for sure just see it's coming. Rex Ryan, those teams, whether it was your own team with the Jets or it was just any other team in the NFL, was Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes the head coach combination? And that, Matt, like that has to be part of the equation. You're right. My faith in this football team figuring it out is solely because I have seen them do it before. That's true. And I know history doesn't always repeat itself. That also is a fact sometimes in sports. But you do have to view this team differently than if we're just talking about like last year. Look at because people are making the Philadelphia Eagles comparison. They're saying, hey, this looks a lot like the Eagles team from last year. Yeah. I disagree with that, but that's, Drew, you've seen it. That's the comparison that people out there nationally are making. The problem with that is, that Eagles team last year had two new coordinators, if I'm not mistaken, who both ended up getting ran out of town, but two new coordinators that year. And that regime, that coaching setup had not shown that they can overcome struggles in the regular season and suddenly fix it in the playoffs. That regime had not won Super Bowls, period. A Super Bowl, period. So, yeah, you're absolutely right that I'm going to have more faith in them figuring out these problems when they have found ways to win 14 straight one-score games. That's the longest streak in NFL history. And the other thing that should make you like step back a little bit and pause, and don't worry, we're going to discuss the flaws, because this is not a football team that can just play like this and win in the playoffs. That's not what I'm arguing. I am saying I think they can fix said problems. Watch what happened yesterday in the NFL. And I think it was Elias Sports Bureau put out some of the numbers and the historical context to what we watched yesterday, but also what we've seen in the NFL this year. For this notion of like, I would love to have a game like the Bills had last night, where the Chiefs win by 30 points or whatever it was, like the Bills did against the Niners. Trust me, I would love that as well. That's not the norm, guys. That's just not the norm in the NFL. As I say over and over, it's not college football, where teams get blown out by 25 points on a weekly basis. Multiple games in one TV window, it happens a lot of times in college football. Yesterday, before Sunday Night Football, 12 of the first 14 games this week in the NFL were decided by one score. So I guess 12 of the first 15 now. And we'll see what happens tonight. What, the Broncos are playing on Monday Night Football, I believe, this evening. I'll be honest, I haven't really focused in
against the Browns
on that game. We'll see if Jameis has any magic again against the Bo Nix and company. But even more than just yesterday, there have been 388 NFL games. 388 of them so far. 307 have been decided by 8 points or less. So a little over 80% of all games are decided by 8 points or less. Like, I would love to be in the 20% category, where they're just constantly in the 20% and they are constantly winning by 10 plus. I know everybody thinks that's like a Chiefs problem. I just told you, like, that's how the NFL plays out. And that doesn't mean they're immune to the flaws. As I said, they exist. It's just like the panic stuff. I just don't get. And you tell me, I don't know how you guys were last week after the Panthers game. Whatever your feeling was then, it's probably the exact same thing today.
I don't think it was very, very different than the way that you're feeling. It was more of just, I think now that we've seen Bryce Young again play well, not that makes you feel a little bit better about how last week went, But I think in some way, shape, or form, it's like, okay, you know, that Bryce Young's turning it around a little bit. He looks good. And it's just one of those games where, like you said, to your point, it's one of the close ones. The Chiefs won the game at the end of the day. And if they go the rest of the season in close games, and when it gets down to the playoffs, if every game is determined by a game-winning field goal and it's in the Chiefs' favor, it's not going to matter to you. It's not going to matter to Chiefs fans. It's not going to matter to anybody who is a Chiefs fan, because in the end, they'll be the ones that are winning the game. So I don't – as that's the one thing I think that is – it's different. And I think we talked about it a little bit last week. You guys have touched on it as well when you and Cody are both in. That for most teams, this would be concerning, or the way that they've played would be concerning. If you look at a lot of other teams' records, by the way, in close games, the fact that the Chiefs have won 14 in a row is ridiculously impressive.
I think some people will view it on the negative end, right? Some people say, you know, 14 one-score games means you're in too many one-score games. But I just said, like, 80% of games are one-score games,
typically.
That's
insanely impressive. Like, I guess on the flip side, since everybody wants to clown the Bengals are 1-7 this year in close games. They've never won more than seven games in the Joe Burrow era that have been quote-unquote close. They're breaking the Patriots record. The Chiefs are in close games. And some of it is luck. It's better to be lucky than good sometimes. They were more lucky than good, maybe you could say, on Friday. But they won the game, and they won 14 straight close ones, which goes to show you that it's deeper than just the one game on Friday as to why this is happening.
No, they have to, of course, play better football than they are right now for this to all happen. I think that's where sometimes there's confusion within the conversation about this. For someone on the text line says, "Hey, stop saying that they're going to be just fine. Stop saying that you're spitting the information." I don't think so at all. We're all in agreement, I think, that this team is not playing great football. I don't know anybody that's claiming they're playing great football. I know I certainly am not. I don't think Drew is. I don't think Cody was last week. Nobody's saying they're playing great football. I am saying, though, they might have a new left tackle before the playoffs. Hopefully that's Sunday night, by the way. Might have a new left tackle, and we'll see what DJ Humphries is. Hollywood Brown looks like he's going to be back around Christmas, week 16 or so. I think Joshua Williams should be the number two corner for this football team. Isaiah Pacheco just had his first game back. Like, these aren't just like no names that are potentially coming back. Charles Omeniu just had his first game back, and I thought he had a pretty big impact already in one game back. That's not even discussing what is just the, hey, this team does flip a switch in the playoffs. Like, you can't deny that. That has happened. Well, and if they don't, and if those players I just mentioned do not contribute, then you're right. We're going to be sitting here in mid-January, end of January, and people are going to be bummed out, and this team will be packing in either the AFC title game or before that. That's true. Like, that is a potential outcome. But this notion, though, like, that it's just impossible because they won a close game against the Raiders in Carolina, that, like, this is the proof that they're not good enough. I would like to see what the end product is. And we're not even close to the end product, because some of the players that are going to be part of the end product haven't even played for this team yet. Let's see what that looks like. And yeah, I would rather be winning games while you're trying to figure it out than be sitting here at, what, last year, 8-4, 9-4, whatever it was at this point in time, and still trying to figure it out. I would rather still be in position to be a number one seed, which seems like it's going to be so vital for this year's team to get, given how early the bye week was.
From the 816, for all the normal teams, but you keep telling us the Chiefs are better than the normal teams. They are, because they won 14 straight close games. Like, that, I think you're proof, I guess, that they're not good enough, or that there's more concern beyond just what we see on the field. Is if they would have lost to Carolina, if they would have lost the game against the Broncos and the Raiders. Like, yes, they've been very close, but they have in some. On the flip side, you might say maybe their luck's going to run out eventually at some point.
Sure.
And unfortunately, maybe it's during a playoff game where that streak of making it to an AFC title game ends. On the flip side of it, though, there's nothing in my mind that you or I or Cody or anybody can say that makes you feel like this team isn't good enough based on what we saw last year. And the fact that, yeah, they haven't looked great, but they literally they keep winning games. Until they lose a game like this, Gold, because they lost a game to Buffalo. That's, again, a really good opponent. If you'd say, I don't know, who they play next who's not good, but if they play somebody who's not good again, whenever the hell that is, then, and they lose that game and it's another game like this, then maybe you have some ammunition to that point. But as long as they keep on winning these games, even if it's to quote-unquote bad opponents, there's nothing that you can say that makes us change our opinion based on just because this team's playing bad, they can't still go on ahead and figure it out and win the Super Bowl.
Look, we're gonna all find this thing out together. I just think until we see this group of players that are going to be part of the playoff team play and see, does that change anything? Like DJ Humphries, we are putting a ton of stock in this guy to come back after a serious injury. And that he's basically going to save the left side of the, that's a big ask. But until I see what that looks like, I don't know why we should act like, oh, this is how it's going to be. This is it. And I'm sorry, they are just judged differently in how I view them. Because they have shown me multiple times that magically in the playoffs last year, after turning the ball over like crazy, they didn't turn the ball over. Offensive line played their best football in the playoffs last year. This team lost on Christmas Day to the Raiders last year, and it was over, right? It was over. And the wide receiver room wasn't, and then all of a sudden, guy that didn't make any plays all year, MVS, made plays in the playoffs. Like, what? I think we've all watched this enough. I don't know. It's very hard to three-peat. It's very hard to go back-to-back. Nobody's three-peated. So, like, if they come up short of the three-peat, I think we'll see how it looks. Is it a first-round exit? Is it an AFC title game loss? Is it a Super Bowl loss? There's obviously different degrees. But ultimately, we all know they're judged on getting the Super Bowl and three-peating. They're graded differently. I'm not arguing that should be the case. Hey, we're going to talk plenty more about DJ Humphries coming up at 11 o'clock, also in 10 minutes. I want to discuss what I think has been this team's best football. Like, when they look their best, there's two things they have done. They did one of them on Sunday on Friday against the Raiders. So I'll tell you what those two things are coming up in 10 minutes. But over the weekend, I had a chance to go to the Hallmark movie premiere.
Yeah.
For, of course, the Chiefs Hallmark movie.
How was that?
It was awesome.
Nice.
It was
fancy.
Great. Yeah, it was Cody and I were there. Cody and I looked at each other like, this is how do we get invited to this thing? Quite honestly, you know, we got an invite to it. Bob was there as well. It was really well done from the folks over at Hallmark and obviously the Chiefs who were part of the production. It was really great in terms of what they were able to put together. Andy Reid was there. Trey Smith, who had a role, a cameo in the movie, was there. And it was just a really well done event. And I appreciate the invite to that. I'll say that the movie, not just saying this because I was in it, and we'll get to that in a second, Drew, briefly, for like a second and a half, I was in the movie. But if you are a Chiefs fan, and if you're a fan of Kansas City, or you love football, or whatever, like, I don't know how you didn't like the movie. Like, yes, it's a Hallmark movie, right? Is it going to be cheesy at times? Of course. It's a feel-good Christmas Hallmark movie. I think that's what a lot of people enjoy about the Hallmark movie. But if you're a fan of Kansas City, how can you not love seeing your city showcased? That was my favorite part of the entire thing, is once again, our city was front and center. Our city once again was front and center, both having stars come into town, the Hallmark Christmas experience that they did around Crown Center. Obviously, I think at one point in time I saw on social media, the movie was trending. It was the number one trending topic in multiple markets, not just in Kansas City. That aspect, not just for the Chiefs and continuing for them, obviously they're excited because it continues to push out their brand, but for Kansas City to have a movie filmed here, Independence to be highlighted the way it was and what that meant for some of the small businesses in Independence when we were shooting the film at the time and all of that, it was just really, really cool. And then the other part is, you know, if you are a sports fan and a football fan, period, we all know you yourself or you know somebody that's superstitious. And if you've seen the movie, I don't want to like spoil the whole thing, but if you've seen the movie, like the plot centers around like this special, sentimental, superstitious hat that their family has had forever. And they believe it's why the Chiefs have won Super Bowls, right? That's the gist. And maybe it's not a hat. Maybe you're somebody that wears the same jersey to a game, whatever it may be. You don't even have to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan to relate to that. And everybody finds a way to be connected because of sports. And that's what's awesome about sports. And so that was just relatable to me, and I think it's relatable to everybody that watched the movie. So I thought they did a great job with it. I enjoyed it. If you didn't see it, I think you can stream it on Peacock. It'll also air probably another 10 times on Hallmark during the holiday season and everything. But it was really, really cool to have a chance to see that, be part of it for the city. And then, yeah, selfishly, obviously, it was cool. Did you watch it? Be honest.
Yes, I did. I watched most of it. I did not watch the entire thing. I saw you, obviously, which was cool. Your car got a lot of airtime as well.
I told you guys back when we filmed it in July, I said, look, they made us on Indiegogo, but I think my car might end up being in the movie more than I am.
The value of it's going up. I mean, whenever you sell it.
The trade-in value, the trade-in value of the car is gone up now. It's now been in a movie. My car needs its own IMDb page. Mm. I was briefly seen walking down the street in Independence. You can see me. We filmed this in July. It was 95, 100 degrees, and they had us wearing sweaters, jeans, because of course it needed to look like it was the holiday season and everything. But it was really cool to be part of it, and family and friends had some fun with it. And the cast did a Q&A after the premiere on Saturday night, and they all raved about Kansas City. Like, again, you should be proud of how Kansas City once again kind of showcased itself. And they all raved about it. They said there were fans tailgating on set. Like, we all know tailgating is the thing here in Kansas City out at Arrowhead. But fans, they said, were tailgating at the set multiple times throughout the month of July or whatever when they were filming this. And they all just raved about Kansas City, which is typically
awesome. Yeah, what good stuff.
Anybody that's never been here, like, anytime we all know somebody, right? Like, you had a family member that's never been here, or you had a friend that came into town, and like, and you start showing them the city, and everybody's like, wow, this is way, way different than what I thought it would be like. And everybody's pleasantly surprised. And Kansas City continues to grow. We all know the World Cup is coming in 2026. So another moment, we've had many here recently, where you got to be proud to be a Kansas Cityan, and whether it was the draft a couple years ago, even add the Hallmark movie to it as well. So really cool to be part of that. Up next, though, I want to tell you what I thought was the best the Chiefs had looked. It's happened a couple times this year. Why aren't they doing it? What does the backfield situation have to do with it? That's coming up next here on Cody and Gold.
This is Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED, and more, all with discretion and compassion. Make your appointment at heartlandmenshealth.com.
Mahomes has a pass for the left side. It is caught. Touchdown. Floating it up to Justin Watson. A 6-yard touchdown. And now Patrick Mahomes has set the all-time Kansas City Chiefs record, besting the late, great Lenny Dawson on a jump ball left side throw to Justin Watson.
Mitch Holthus on the call right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. That was a ridiculous throw, by the way, from Patrick Mahomes. Like, I know we've all been recently talking a ton about the O-line play and the issues with this football team. Like, almost quietly, Patrick Mahomes has been playing some really good football the last couple of weeks. He has. Like, I know people are frustrated about a lot of things right now around an 11-1 football team. But that throw is absurd.
That was him to just be getting hit and still throw it.
I mean, just a ridiculous throw from Patrick Mahomes. We'll talk more about him a little bit later on throughout the week, I'm sure, getting set to take on the Chargers, which suddenly, maybe not for divisional purposes, I don't think anybody's worried about the division, but it's a huge Sunday Night Football game coming up at Arrowhead against the Chargers, who will find a way to win again against Atlanta. This is a big-time Sunday Night Football matchup, and it has number one seed ramifications as the Chiefs try to keep their distance still away from the Buffalo Bills, who just destroyed a 49ers team who I felt like last night, once Christian McCaffrey went down with that, when we now know it was a knee injury that's going to likely end his season, that was kind of it. That was kind of it for the 49ers, as the Bills just absolutely ran away with that football game on Sunday Night Football. Someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, said, can you tell us, Gold, when you were shown in the Hallmark movie? I don't know how far into the movie. I don't know, Drew, you watched it too. 30 minutes in, maybe? The scene basically where they're having lunch or coffee, I guess it would be, on the street, and the waitress is talking to them and says, hey, did you see we're supposed to get our first snow tonight? I think was what it was. And they start the scene. They start the scene wide on the street, and there's a black car. That's my car. And then in the distance, you see me walking with another lady there. And that's it. It's quick. It's very quick. If you're not looking for it, you're not going to see it. I was an extra. I didn't have an actual cameo. I just had an extra. There were plenty of cameos from people like Trey Smith and Mecole Hardman, the mayor. Who else? Andy Reid, obviously. So anyway, let's talk about this Chiefs team. I said before the break, I think there's two times where we have seen this football team offensively look their best. I don't think it's been all that complicated. And no, it's not just protect Patrick Mahomes. Of course, I'm saying in particular, they've been at their best when they do one of two things. One is simply get the ball up to DeAndre Hopkins. Now, statistically, he also just ended up with a really nice game, 4 catches for 90 yards, and they needed every bit of them in this game against the Raiders. But that doesn't account for a few of the passes they just threw up to him, and he was able to draw a penalty, and he's done that a couple times. He had the one drop, you know, and people joked like that, okay, welcome to Kansas City moment, part of the wide receiver room. There was a drop. Yeah, I'm not worried about DeAndre Hopkins' hands. He's got some of the best hands in football.
He almost grabbed it one. He grabbed a one-handed ball like afterwards or whatever.
Not concerned one bit of any wide receiver with a drop pass. D-Hop would be very low on my list. I think when we talked about this, when he signed with the Chiefs or traded to the Chiefs, that over the last, 5 years or something, he's like, top of the league, but in not having drops. So bottom of the league in drops. Not worried about that, but my point is, I think they've looked their best when they're willing to just go up and let him make a play. They don't have many wide receivers recently that could go and do that. High point of football, utilize their size. D-Hop has shown that, and even when he doesn't catch it, they've been able to draw some defensive pass interference penalties. So that's one time where I think it's been pretty evident that you were able to have success on offense. The other thing, and I know this goes back to a larger point for any of us that have been Kansas City long enough under Andy Reid, I know they're never going to be run first, and they should never be run first. Not with Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying they need to be. But they've been at their best offensively when they have had a running game, and they've been willing to commit to it. In this particular game, early on, I know they didn't have any success running. Some of you listening might say, hey, but Gold, they were averaging like 2.3 yards per carry. That's why they abandoned the run. I hear you. And if it wasn't for, a 34-yard run from Isaiah Pacheco in his return, then the numbers are even more skewed. You know, even less skewed, I should say. Isaiah Pacheco, 7 carries, 44 yards. Yeah, it's a 6.3 yard per carry average. That's obviously, if you watch the game, you know that box score is misleading. He had the 1 34-yard run. Kareem Hunt, 7 carries for 15 yards, 2.1 yard per carry average. They didn't have a lot of success running. I think at times, though, the Bucs game is the example I will use. At times, just because they didn't have success in the first half does not mean they should abandon it. And at halftime of this game, what do they have? 7 carries? Something like that? Go back to the Bucs game where in the first half they had like 8 or 9 carries. And in the second half, Kareem Hunt was able to run all over the Bucs, and it's a big reason why they ended up winning that football game. I think they abandoned it still too much. And at some point when they play their best, it allows them to have more success in the passing game when they're running the football. And I don't know if this was just in this game, hey, they're trying to ease Pacheco in. You know, Isaiah Pacheco got introduced as a co-starter with Kareem Hunt, and the crowd was great welcoming Pacheco back from his injury. Kareem Hunt got the first, 2 carries of the game, and then I think Pacheco worked his way in. And I don't know if that's going to be the split going forward as time goes on. I still think Pacheco is the better running back, despite how good of a job Kareem Hunt has done. Yep. Pacheco's the better back, but are they going to, you know, go? I mean, it was really 50-50 carry. 7 carries, 7 carry. Is that what it's going to be? Or are we going to see eventually Pacheco get, you know, let's call it 15 carries and Kareem Hunt gets 5 or something? I would think eventually it's going to spread itself out, although they want to keep both these guys fresh for the postseason. But I thought they left something on the table in terms of the running game. I understand that the Raiders had some success stopping it in the first half. I just think sometimes they abandoned it. In a 19-17 game with the left tackle issues, I don't think Patrick Mahomes should be throwing it 46 times. I just don't. And that's exactly what happened. He was 26 of 46 for 306 and a touchdown.
Yeah, I agree with you because of the, I think there's a good point. The left tackle reasoning is it gives them, not that it enters, you want Patrick Mahomes to throw the ball, but it also enters the likelihood that Wanya Morris blows another block and Mahomes is getting hit hard once again. And obviously you want to be able to keep him healthy, but the way that we've seen them play too, just effectively, if they average 2 or 3 yards a carry, it gets them to 3rd and 4. They've been as good as anybody else, if not better than they have been better, I guess, than everybody else in regards to third down. And the games look uglier at times, but the Chiefs have been in control for the most part. I think that was the big thing for Cody last week was the game was close, but the Chiefs were in control of that game.
The Panthers game. Yes. I thought on Friday though in this game the Chiefs got outplayed.
Yeah,
I know you don't like to hear it because it's the Raiders and we all hate the Raiders, but the Raiders outplayed the Chiefs. And ultimately, yes, all that matters is the Chiefs won. But the Raiders, I think, outplayed Kansas City in this game, and that's where people obviously were frustrated with the result, even though it was a win to get them to 11-1.
It's one of the things that you look at the way that they run their offense, and again, this can be a Nagy thing, it can be whatever you want it to be. But to your point, they look better when they run the ball effectively, and it opens things up a little bit when they can run the ball well. And I think maybe getting Isaiah Pacheco back in it is going to just provide some more fresh life to that. Not that Kareem Hunt's wearing down necessarily, but he's been running the ball an awful. He's been running the ball as much as Derrick Henry has been.
Oh, I think he's wearing down. I mean, I think the reason why they were willing to give him the carries is because they knew Pacheco was coming back. Like if Pacheco was out for the entire season, I don't think we would have seen the workload that Kareem Hunt got. You know what I mean? Like, I think
in terms of the last few games, is what you're saying.
Since Kareem Hunt has been signed, he's carried, I think, the second or third most times in football. You mentioned Derrick Henry. Like, yeah. That's been since he arrived, and thank goodness they've needed every bit of it from Kareem Hunt, and he's done a way better job than I think even the most optimistic person could have thought he was going to do for this team. I don't think he would have got the same amount of carries during that stretch, though, if they knew he had to be the guy the rest of the way. I think that allowed them to do it as well because they knew Pacheco was coming back. Remember, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has just been a healthy scratch. I get, you know, healthy understanding physically the off the field mental stuff that he's been open about. And if anybody didn't watch the interview that he had a couple weeks ago, you should definitely check it out. And an easy guy to root for. But he's not really able to give them anything production wise right now, it looks like. So, yeah, I think they had to do that with Kareem Hunt.
I do think that it is interesting for that 3rd-and-2 play. That they didn't, I get why they didn't run the ball necessarily, but them being able to, or them going to that play action deep ball, I didn't understand it where effectively, like you said, they haven't been good at that
The 3rd-and-2?
Yeah, one, but also two, your offensive line, if you're doing a play action, there's, with the offensive line, the way that they've been playing, play action, more time for things to develop. If Xavier really hadn't been open enough or even gotten some separation, he might have not had time to throw or not felt comfortable throwing. What happens to that? Somebody mentioned, you know, running screens. I think that's where Xavier really can be effective. I mean, he once again had a really solid game, even though they didn't get the deep ball connection. He's getting more and more in tune with this offense where not that it's like a run play, but in a way, like doing the jet sweep stuff, doing quick bubble screen, doing just, you know, jailbreak screens or whatever the case is. Get the ball out of Mahomes' hands where you don't have to worry about the offensive line at all. Really, because they shouldn't be giving up a sack in 1 second.
And whenever I bring up, you know, in this case, I think they should run the ball more, or bring up, hey, their best offense, that of course is getting the ball to DeAndre Hopkins right now, I guess, other than Noah Gray, who continues to be really, really good for this football team. Where would they be without Noah Gray on offense right now? That's kind of a scary thing to think about. I also know whenever we bring this stuff up, though, that some of the things we're saying they either need to do more or that they're not doing, that goes back to how we started the show talking about the confidence that I do have come playoff time.
Yeah.
You know, there's the balance of like, do I think they're holding everything back? No. Do I think there are certain elements they're willing to lean into more come playoff time? Absolutely. And I think that's the difference when we talk about this. Hey, coming up in 15 minutes or so, there are two things that don't only have to happen for the rest of the season to be successful, but I think on Sunday night against the Chargers, and there are two things that are, I view as easy personnel switches. One, I think, is an automatic to happen. The other, maybe we differ on. I'll get to those two things that have to happen before Sunday Night Football in 15 minutes. You guys can keep interacting with us. Appreciate the text. Jay Southland, Tow Service, text line 913-586-7965. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you. Cody will be back later on in the week with us. Briefly, I want to pivot to college football, and we'll get to how the locals ended their seasons prior to bowl games, at least for two of the teams, coming up tomorrow on the show. But the big story in sports over the weekend, honestly, was the flag planting that was going on after wins in the brawls that ensued and how each of the brawls were handled. It was a crazy Saturday in college football, most notably Michigan and Ohio State. Huge upset. I mean, Ohio State was a 19.5 point favorite. They lose at home to Michigan. And because of the expanded college football playoff field, it doesn't eliminate Ohio State. That's a whole other conversation. That's the only downside. That game didn't really mean that much in terms of playoff implications. Like Ohio State is still in perfect position to to get there. Ryan Day stuff, that's a whole different conversation. He once again can't beat Michigan even when they're on the down year. But the story that's getting national headlines, I'm talking about even out of sports. Like, you go to pick your favorite news outlet, they're talking about this game because of what happened afterwards. And now there's a discussion in college athletics about whether or not this flag planting should be allowed. So for those that don't know, after the game, you can take a listen to Gus Johnson. Michigan decided to plant their flag at midfield.
Ohio State field, and the Buckeyes rushed right to them. And now there's some skirmishes going on the field. An unsportsmanlike gesture.
Now, Gus Johnson on Fox, and I love Gus because we'll play some of his calls later on. He was incredible in the game.
Yeah.
Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt were acting like there was like a true like war crime was committed by planting the flag at midfield. Now, I understand Ohio State players probably actually feel like that is like a legit crime. I get it. The rivalry's intense. They just got done playing a football game. There's now seemingly a real conversation whether or not they should allow the flag planting. This is from Ross Dellinger over at Yahoo Sports. He said, quote, all of the flag planting madness is some college sports leaders suggesting that conferences should police such post-game incidents and that some believe that this will eventually result in fines and suspensions for players as an automatic thing going forward. This is because it also happened in, a North Carolina football game over the weekend.
Arizona State.
Florida State. I think there were four games. Yeah. Four games where this was a problem. Like, overall, like, we're talking about college kids showing emotion. Like, I don't think Ohio State should like that the flag got planted. But also, there's a point where, like, win the football game then. Like, there are consequences to losing. Then players got pepper sprayed, it looked like, after the game because they were struggling to separate. Players on both sides. You saw the video of Michigan players kind of, like, trying to rub, pour water in their eyes to get the pepper spray out.
Yeah.
That's a tricky situation because on the surface, I'm with probably a lot of you, which is like, why are we pepper spraying 19-year-old college football players after a game? But I'll play devil's advocate for a second.
Okay.
And I would ask, when is it okay? Like, is the answer just it's never okay? Or like, when's the line have to be crossed? Because it wasn't just a little brawl for 15 seconds. This thing was going on for a couple minutes. You're talking about super athletic football players in pads. When does it stop? Like when someone rips their helmet off and tries to use it as a weapon? I'm just playing the other side for a second because I saw a lot of people mad that they're like, hey, did they really need to use pepper spray? And I honestly probably think they didn't as well. I'm with you. But for those saying like, hey, it's just the heat of the moment. Okay. Like when is it go too far though? Like I just because they're in football pads, the game was over, mind you. I'm not talking about a fight in game. A fight in game, of course, it is what it is. A fight after a game at some point, there has to still be some like law and order, if you will. Like when is the line drawn? Is it after someone gets seriously hurt? Then we're like, well, you guys should have tried to separate. That's how they got them dispersed in that moment. It's a tricky situation.
Yeah. I think the pepper spray thing, I just think it was too far because it's not like this hasn't happened before though. Like I understand that it was more of a big deal than it was previously and credit. Look, Michigan, credit to them for winning the game, and they wanted to go and plant the flag. Credit for Ohio State for standing up, and being like, this is not going to happen on our field, and we're not going to stand for it. I do think that, was it escalated, though, because Fox just kept the TV screen on? Because I feel
the players didn't know the TV was on. I don't think that escalated.
I know. I'm just saying, is it a bigger deal because we saw more of it where, Like the Florida State game, like they were getting into each other all game, and then that happened after the game was done. Like the Arizona State Sun Devils put the pitchfork into the A in Arizona, and there was a big scuffle and the whole deal with North Carolina and NC State as well. I just wonder if we saw it for a longer period of time than we normally would be shown it, so we felt like it was going on for a longer period of time.
I don't know the answer.
That might just be me because it seems like everything was not okay, but they've handled stuff. They've had issues before Ohio State and Michigan, like in the locker room and all that stuff. It hasn't been handled in a way without pepper spray, I guess.
Sure. I mean, there was an incident involving Michigan and Michigan State, or Michigan State, I believe, a couple years ago,
yes.
where a player got seriously hurt. There was a felony charge of assault, and that was like, and that player got kicked out of school and everything.
That
happened in the tunnel, if I'm not mistaken, in 2022 or something. Mm-hmm. This was on the field. Yeah, it was out in the open. I would say though, like we've seen brawls happen in sports, nothing new. This one dragged on for longer. Yeah, we all saw it, but like the actual brawl, I think was longer. Some people were texting in, and I didn't see this, so I don't know if it's 100% true. A few people had texted in and said there was some reports out of Michigan that perhaps a referee or somebody was on the ground and they're worried they're getting trampled, and that's why the pepper spray was used. That's my point, is like, when is it okay? Like, if for people that were upset that pepper spray was used, that was like the immediate reaction, like, how dare they? I would ask, like, at what point is it okay? Like, are we supposed to just let somebody be trampled in that circumstance?
No. If somebody's seriously on the brink of being hurt, like you mentioned the helmet being ripped off situation, that, sure. I think then you escalate to that situation that you feel is necessary and potentially it means pepper spray. I just think if they're pushing and shoving, they're ripping the flag off, if Jack Sawyer's ripping the Michigan flag off and everybody's pushing and shoving.
Yeah.
I will say this. There needs to be some responsibility, though, for the coaches, the administrators, to be able to de-escalate it a little bit better so it doesn't get to that point. Like, I understand why the flag thing is a problem. But we saw it in Florida State. It didn't get to that point. I think, you know, the de-escalation of the situation. And I think the coaches hate. I think there's an aspect of the coaches hate the other coaches so much even still that who knows what goes on if they just allow. Ryan Day was just standing there as well the whole time. I don't know if you saw that video. It's a video of Ryan Day just standing there while everything's happening.
And I understand that he's out. I tweeted that very thing on Saturday. I was like, hey, why aren't some of the coaches trying to get everybody to the locker room? Easier said than done. I get it.
Correct.
Right? There's 100 athletes. But I have, like, don't act like we haven't seen it before where college basketball is way easier to do this because we're talking about, like, 12 players versus 100. But there's plenty of times where I have seen coaches when there's a little bit of brawl, like they'll they do the point to the locker room and they start rounding everybody up. And none of the coaches were doing
that's what I'm saying.
It got out of hand, and that's why this is being discussed. As far as do we need to ban the flag plant?
No.
You know, I hate this overreaction right away to it.
No.
That seems silly to me. It is still, you know, it is still an emotional game, and it's right after. Like, everybody has their own philosophy. Like, would you personally go and plant the flag? I don't know if I would do that, but I'm also not 20 years old in the heat of a rivalry. I didn't just play a football game against a school that I absolutely hate, against a school that said we were cheating the year before, all this kind of stuff that was built up around said game.
Yeah. Like, your job's to de-escalate like that. And I think that's where, you know, Michigan and Ohio State got fined, I believe, $100,000, I think is what it was. Which again, $100,000, really, that's nothing for those schools. But, you got to de-escalate the situation as a head coach, as an administrator. Like, it's your job to kind of be a part of that as well as a head coach. Like, you're also on the field and doing your job, but you need to de-escalate the situation, to your point of pointing to the locker room. Like, get to the locker room.
I didn't have as big of an issue with the way the pepper spray stuff and everything like that as other people did, clearly. Because I was like, my thing is just, at what point, like, are we supposed to just let them continue to beat the hell out of each other after the game?
And maybe that's why the police officers felt the pepper spray was needed, because there wasn't any de-escalating of the situation. And
you see Greg Sankey's comments?
I think it's a judgment call. And I think I think that they didn't have to use it, but I understand why they did, I guess.
Did you see, was it Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC?
I did not see his comments. Well, what did he say now?
He said, quote, "If you want to plant a flag, play capture the flag or join the military, or you fly to the
moon."
What an
tell your fans to stop throwing bottles on the field at players, please.
What an unrealistic quote, though. Like, what world? Like, what planet is he living on? Like, just what a ridiculous quote that's out there. And yes, for the SEC commissioner to have that comment when Texas fans, who of course are now in the SEC, were mad with the call and were throwing stuff on the field. Like, don't take the try to play Mr. High Horse.
Please don't.
Greater than everybody else, kind of thing.
Steal other teams from other conferences. That's not good. So this whole, like, I don't know. I don't even want to get into the whole thing from the text line regarding the thing.
About what?
About situation.
What?
They said the game is over. Stop assaulting people. So it's okay. So, hey, if
Hold on, though. I agree to a certain extent.
I agree, too.
If the game, but that's what I said. If the fight happens in the game, then yeah, obviously, like, the police officers aren't running on the field if it happens in the game. After the game, at some point, though, like, they're not they're not playing the game anymore. Like if a fight happens for 30 seconds, no, but like, you can't just the police officer is supposed to just stand there and watch these guys fight each other for 5 minutes?
No, but I don't think the police officers had to pepper spray. I don't know. Look, I don't know how long they were on the field. No. I don't know what it took for them to get to that situation. What did it take for you? Like, they're on the field. I understand that. I think people should be, you know, in that situation. Get the hell off the field. The game's over with. You planted the flag. You made your statement. It's done. It's over with, and be gone. You don't have to extend it further. Where I get why the pepper spray was used if they felt like they needed to use it. That's not the problem. It's just if you resorted to that first, just try to get off the field first, and then if you need to, then fine.
We'll get back to this a little bit later, I'm sure, on the show. It definitely has been a huge topic, even outside the sports world, with what occurred in college football over the weekend. Coming up next, though, I said there's two things that have to happen before Sunday Night Football, as a matter of fact, to allow the Chiefs to actually get things quote-unquote fixed. I'll tell you what they are next.